This is CliffCentral.com.
Many women leaders seem hell-bent on holding other women back. For thousands of years, two forces have combined to create a glass ceiling so powerful, so strong, capable women hit it and simply come crashing beneath it. Recently, the head of South Africa's ANC Women's League, Batabile Dlamini, shocked South Africa by not calling for the removal of Deputy Minister of Education Mduduzi Manana. After Dlamini defended Manana, even after he was caught on camera abusing a woman over a slur. My goal in this episode is not to interrogate Dlamini or Manana, but to look at how we arrived at a point in history where the perceived value of women is so low, glass ceilings fortify, abuse continues, and crippling social injustices are leveled against women on a daily basis. Welcome back to the next episode of the Brain and Brand Show, where I look at the relationship between brain and brand power, how people impact brands, and how stories and brands impact the potential of people. A few years ago, I coined the phrase brand woman. And the goal was not to, of course, objectify or commoditize women, but to show that there is a values-based story that society is brought into that causes society to treat women a certain way. Simply put, if we raise, and my theory is very simple, if we raise the value of how society sees women, then the treatment of women, and more importantly, women's ability to exercise their basic human rights of just fulfilling their God-given potential, will be equal or greater than men. Once we raise the perceived value, or as we raise the perceived value, things shift as we raise. So this episode, I want to look at how we arrived at this point where gender equality has become this extraordinary thing, but the pace of change is happening slow. I want to look at the inconvenient truth of gender equality. Well, that's the goal of today's episode. Thank you so much for everyone who continues to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, on Cliff Central. Thank you to Cliff Central for continuing to give me this platform. I'm grateful to be able to share my work and my passion around brain and brand power and gender equality. So we know it's the right thing to do from a human rights perspective. We've also established that there is a wonderful business case for many women leaders and for more women leaders. So what's really holding us back? What is this inconvenient truth? Let me just break down three levels that, and then I'm going to give you a fourth one as well. But the first thing is that bad science, historically, bad science showed and tried to demonstrate that women were weaker, that women had less capacity. And fortunately, neuroscience has completely debunked this. And I did a whole episode around the neuroscience of women and men's brains. So you can go back a few episodes and listen to that. I don't want to get involved too deeply in the differences because I've already covered it. But the second thing is religions. Religions, still until this day, reduce women to narrow roles. Spiritual leaders around the world must step up and acknowledge that men, through backward beliefs, scripted text, and limited women, and this must be dealt with. It's very simple. If you look at the vast majority of scriptural text, I am shocked at how it sort of narrows and limits people. It limits women. And on top of bad science and narrow religious beliefs, communities and cultures were formed that suggested women must stay in a very narrow place. So, communities and cultures are holding women back at an extraordinary level. I've seen cultures that literally, during a marriage ceremony, tell women that their man cheating is okay. In several cultures around the world, not just in one or two, but in several, they pull women to the side and say, now that you're married, just know that men are wired to cheat. They're going to be at your neighbor's house with other women, and you must adjust. That's fact, guys. So cultures are holding people back. But the last one is what I call the misalignment between the parental investment theory and the workplace. The parental investment theory argues that part of the reason why men take off after getting a woman pregnant is because they don't have a big stake, a biological stake in staying around. That women have to stay around, otherwise the child dies. You can't nurture the woman being there during critical phases of when she's pregnant, once she has the baby, and right after those months leading up to the pregnancy, leading up to the birth, during birth, and right after, a woman has to be there. If she's not, then the child is vulnerable and, you know, will likely pass away. So men don't have that stake. So the parental investment theory, women's need to be there during that period. And what happens in the workplace in terms of policy to allow for this, to enable women to be able to navigate around that particular period that the PIT, parental investment theory, argues for, is misaligned. So the workplace has to realign, and this is critical. So gender equality is going to be very slow and struggle to move forward if these four areas we don't deal with. But before I expound on this any further, let me go back a bit. You know, people like Lamini and others who, you know, allow Manana and people like that to get away with such tragic circumstances without even realizing it, they are responding to a thousands of year old programming in their mind. Let's talk about this thousands of year programming quickly. Since the beginning of modern democracy during the 1200s in England up until this day, women's voices have been excluded from policymaking via the luxury of voting. The first country to grant women the right to vote was New Zealand in 1893. And even until this day, Saudi Arabian women are still largely excluded from this process. From the first women to fight for the right to vote in France to the late 1700s, to the phenomenal women locally, Helen Suzman, Lillian Ngoyi, Winnie Mandela, and others, who marched in 1956 to fight for gender equality, nearly every country in the world observes the plight of women in a dedicated month. And in a moment, I'm going to argue why we must continue celebrating Women's Month, even though some women, some feminists, argue that it's patronizing. But I want to talk about how patriarchy continues on a very subtle and structural and systematic level to cripple women. There are countries like Yemen, where in Yemen, if a woman goes to court, she's considered to be half a witness. You need two women to be one witness. Yeah, that's right. There are some countries where women can only inherit half the land of their brother. So on a very systematic structural level, there are policies and government all throughout society that continue to perpetuate this extraordinary lower perceived value of women. And I want that to really, really sink in. So whenever people are talking about why are we celebrating Women's Month and so forth, why are we on and on about this gender equality thing, is because the perceived value in men has been supported and substantiated by thousands of years of men ruling, being able to vote and structure society to add value. And this is seeped through on just about every level, from culture, religion, and everywhere. So, let's talk a little bit more about a truth that we have to get into around why it is we need to expedite this. According to a gender study entitled Women Matter by leading global management consulting firm McKinsey & Company, companies with a higher proportion of women in top management perform better. In the same study, an executive of a banking group who preferred anonymity said, when women sit on an executive committee, the nature of interactions change. But one woman, there is not enough. You need several of them. Globally, women represent 21% of senior management positions, and while SA does a bit better at 28%, only 8% of local companies have a female CEO. The government is doing their part to smash the ceiling by passing gender equality bills, but it seems the private sector must be more vigilant. Now, I've stressed that there are a lot of women I know personally who doesn't like Women's Month. And I'm not sure how you feel about it. But I want you to think about that if all we do during Women's Month is celebrate, wear cute outfits, and just really, you know, bake good cookies and stuff, we are on some level playing into the stereotype that's been built over thousands of years. So part of the reason why I want to have this conversation, this very frank conversation about this inconvenient truth around gender equality, is because many of us, without knowing it, are making it worse. Many of us, without realizing it, we are continuing to drive women into this space where their value is perceived in a way that creates an environment for abuse, for limitations on their potential, and chaos and microaggressions all around. So I believe we need to lift the value of brand woman and celebrate Women's Month globally, but we need to do it differently. And this is how. There are three reasons why we should stand firm behind celebrating what I call brand woman all year, not just in a month. But if we're going to celebrate a month, what should we be doing? Firstly, to create awareness for historical challenges and progress, we need to develop the context. Secondly, acknowledge the current plight of women through dialogue and debate. And lastly, develop platforms for investment strategy and better integration into the sciences. Sure, excess and unnecessary parties should be cut, but a 600-year democratic head start by men from a voting rights perspective requires a focused effort by all of us, and August is a fine month to do it. As we celebrate Brand Woman and give rise to a platform for healthy discussion around gender unity, we must bring all stakeholders who engineer the larger cause and begin discussing the real issues. We can't afford to keep paying lip service to the millions of young girls out there who have a glass ceiling placed squarely above their heads. Every man, woman, boy, and girl, we're in this together. That's why I believe in the 1500s, the poet John Donne started his iconic poem, No Man is an Island, by inspiring the reader to consider how interconnected we all are, saying, "No man is an island entire of itself." And three quarters of a way through the short poem, he penned a paragraph that I consider to be the most powerful line in social responsibility's history, when he said, "For each man, death diminishes me, for I am evolved in mankind." On a very subtle, biased, subconscious level, if you noticed, he's using the word man. He's masculizing. He's making sort of humanity masculine. And what's important as you go through your own sort of relationship with gender equality, do you realize that's what patriarchy did? It created this sort of default sense that the highest human was masculine, and that a lower perceived value, what I call this concept of brand woman, was reduced, and femininity is seen as being reduced. If you take an implicit association test and you go and you have your brain and your sort of biases tested, you'll probably see that you also rate and value men above women. In fact, there were studies done on lesbians where they were asked to grade tests, and the test that had male names versus female names, even though they were the exact same test, lesbians who had gotten married often rated men, weighted men's tests with higher scores. Why is this important? It's important because you can fight for women, you can fight for gender equality, but still, because of this thousands of years of programming that has now seeped its way into the school systems, into the art community, throughout society, religions, and cultures, the inconvenient truth is that we all are biased. We all, on some level, look at brand man and brand woman very differently. And I want to challenge you to go out there and ask yourself and ask people around you to push themselves into their biases and create more opportunity where men and women are given sort of the same platform and see what happens. Because the only way we're going to reverse these biases and increase the value and the perceived value in society of how, you know, of women in general, is that we have to start creating new connections in the brain. We have to start shifting what's happening in religion. We have to, and this is not going to be easy, guys, but we got to start shifting what happens throughout policy and governments, throughout school systems, throughout every critical social pillar. You get the point. When a woman bears her dreams, all of us are impacted. And when she resurrects them because we create the conditions for her to thrive, the world is a better place. And we want to ensure every young man and woman has an equal chance of thriving in South Africa, in Africa, and around the world. Thank you so much for listening to the next episode of the Brain and Brand Show. Join us next week as we go inside of another conversation that looks at the relationship between personal branding, branding, stories, optimizing brain power, the full scope of the relationship between the brain and the brands. So, thanks so much again to the team at Cliff Central and to all of you. Remember to email me, timothymaurice@gmail.com. I really appreciate your emails from all over the world to help drive the content and the conversation for this weekly podcast. We'll be back with the next episode of The Brain and Brand Show.
This is CliffCentral.com.